So we have some guests with me today, and let's get going. I'll announce the news later, but I'm really excited to be talking with this with the people that just came from Caracas. So bienvenidos todos. And Let's start out by having everybody introduce themselves. And, Dan, you want to go first?
Okay, my name is Dan Shea, and I am an artist with Metro Murals. I'm also with Veterans for Peace, and I was asked by the Chica,
okay, hold on. We'll continue with some more music until we resolve some slight technical problems. So, hold on.
Con tus propias manos, la cuna de tu hijo, que tu mujer te vea cortar el paraíso. Para colgar del techo como en los tiempos idos que volverán un día hasta, como te digo, trabajarás de noche que se oiga tu martillo, está haciendo la cuna que diga tu vecino, alguna vez la sangre te manchará el anillo, que tu mujer lo enjugue, que manche su vestido. Las noches serán blancas de columpiado fino, hará según el árbol la cuna de tu niño, para que tenga el sueño en la oquedad del nido, para que tenga el ángel en un oculto brillo. La obra será tuya, verás que no es lo mismo. Será como tus brazos, la cuna de tu niño. Se mecerá con aire, te acordarás del vino, dirás, duerme en mi cuna y verás que no es lo mismo. Las noches serán blancas de columpiado pino, hará según el árbol la cuna de tu niño, para que tenga el sueño en la oquedad del nido, para que tenga el ángel en un oculto.
Okay, we are back. Now everybody, bienvenido a todos juntos.
Gracias.
Okay. Let's start from the front. Dan, just everybody introduce themselves, and we can go on from there.
All right.
Okay. My name is Dan Shea, and I'm an artist and a muralist. And I was asked by PCAST to come down to do a mural in solidarity with the 23 Cinero. And I'm also with Veterans for Peace, and was to give a talk at the university in Caracas.
My name is Shizuko Hashimoto. I am a PCAST volunteer and board member. I also work for the Mackenzie River Gathering Foundation.
And my name is Abby Sewell, and I'm also a PCAST volunteer, and I'm a writer. I write for the Portland Alliance newspaper, and that was my main interest in going to Venezuela.
Okay, let's start from the top then. Why did you go down there? Let's go down there, and then after that, tell us what happened when you were down there.
All right. Well, I was one of the few people who organized the delegation. I've been on delegations and organized delegations to Latin American countries before and understand and appreciate the value of being able to experience firsthand the different cultures and revolutionary actions of people of Latin America. So I really wanted to bring that experience to members of the Portland community, so that is the primary reason why I organized or I helped to organize the delegation, and I also went down myself to experience the Bolivarian Revolution firsthand.
Okay, so when you were down there, tell me what happened. What sort of things did you do? What people did you listen to? What
as an organizer, we had set up different meetings with different community organizations, including Community Media Radio, Vive TV, which is the government radio, government TV station, and we had several interviews with them. In addition, we set up meetings with various other sort of organizations that maybe Abby and Dan can talk about a little bit more.
Okay, great. Abby, tell me what happened when you was down there. Tell us your experiences and what you saw and felt. And
well, for myself, I was very interested in seeing the independent media down there. I had heard a lot about Venezuela up here, and I was interested in going down as a journalist to see what was true and what was hype. And for me, one of the best things was getting to see the community radio station that we went to there, which I'm sure you guys would appreciate, too. They have this huge, amazing studio, and they have programs where they bring low-income kids in, and they teach them how to use the radio equipment. They have hundreds of different community organizations that produce their own radio shows, and that was pretty amazing. Another thing that was also really amazing was getting to stay in the neighborhood that we stayed in. It's because the neighborhood there is pretty much run by a collective of people who live in the neighborhood, and they take care of their own housing and food and all work together to make decisions. They don't get money from the government for this, except for certain programs. Like, the government has reconstructed some houses that were falling apart, but for the most part, they're totally independent, and I thought that was amazing.
Dan, and what happened when you was down there? What sort of things did you do? And tell me what sort of things you felt when you was down there in this amazing Caracas.
Well, one thing I felt, I was back at home in a lot of sense. My heritage is my father is from Panama, and it's been one of those things that I've always wanted to be a part and in solidarity with Latin America. I've been on and off with PCAS for some 30 years and was involved in sanctuary work during the 1980s. So going to Venezuela was to look at what was happening in a revolutionary country. I was there to learn, to learn from people. And when we went to the Bente Trace, it was each and every individual person that we spoke to that seemed to have a grasp of what was their own personal history, a grasp of what was going on. They were critical of Chavez in some ways, but it was in major support. They respected him, that he had given them a voice and an opportunity, but they felt that it wasn't Chavez who started the revolution, but that he came out of the revolution that they had started years ago. And this is something I'm still trying to get my head around, and so there's a lot of study yet to be done. What can we learn in 10 days? But each and every person we met, whether it was a cab driver, whether it was a teacher on the street, would tell us about the Bente Trace. They would say that this was a place that was very hard, very difficult place to live, was considered by a lot of people as a place that was run with crime and drugs, but that when Chavez when the coup came about, and they tried to remove him and the police tried to suppress the people, it was the people of the Bente Trace that came out of their apartments and out of the hills and defended the people, and people said, "You don't know how much these people did for us. You can just not understand." And so we were there with those people.
I wanted to maybe, I think the listeners would maybe appreciate a little bit of explanation of what El 23 de Enero is. El 23 de Enero is a neighborhood, a barrio in Caracas. By no means the largest one, but pretty large. I think there are about 80,000 people that live in it. It used to be a sort of a housing development project. There's a great article in Adbusters, I think a couple months ago, that people should read. It's the 23rd of January, that just sort of describes what's going on there. But we had the privilege of staying with a collective called La Piedrita, which Nelson Santana, a muralist who came to Portland this past fall, he belongs to. So we were able to, that's the collective that Abby was talking about, and the collective operates with it, within El 23 de Enero.
Abby, when you was down there, I'm really interested. You said you connected with the independent media down there. Go into a little bit more details about that, since, you know, I come on the heels of the grassroots radio conference and all that, and I got a lot of energy from that, and I know there's a lot of community radio going on in Caracas. So could you go into details about your experiences with that?
Yeah, the radio station that we visited is called Radio Negro. And
Primero.
Oh, Primero. Okay. And it's one of many hundreds of community radio stations in Venezuela, all of which have a kind of a network where they work together and hold meetings and conferences and basically attempt to build the movement for community radio. And they talked a lot about the struggles for being able to free the airwaves in Venezuela, much like in the U.S., where the airwaves are mostly controlled by these huge corporate stations. They talked about, you know, having people from various different community radio stations come out of the woodwork to go protest when the police or the government would be trying to shut down a pirate radio station. And one thing that I thought was interesting that they told us is that since the Chavez government has come in, that hasn't stopped completely. The airwaves are still controlled by the large radio stations, but that the government at least now will negotiate with them.
And did you have a chance to talk with any independent media people?
Me?
Yes.
This is Shizuki. Yes, I had a chance to talk to Carlos Lugo, who was pretty high up in sort of organizing Radio Negro Primero, which I have to repeat what Abby said, that it was an amazing, basically they were organized and were such a community resource. For example, one great example is they had a big, I don't know what they're called, soundboard, mixing board. They had all of the equipment to be able to take the radio show wherever. And so they would do it, on a weekly, on a daily basis. They would just bring all of this equipment out and they say, all right, here's your show. What are the voices from the streets? What are the voices from the barrio? And so, through our contact with him, we also, later were, on a TV program with the same guy, Carlos Lugo. And so it was an inspiration to me to see, people who believe so much in their community and the importance of giving voice to the community and just being really open. It wasn't a certain message that they were trying to promote. They gave airtime and space to everybody, from the smallest child to, you know, the angriest grandmother, that everybody had a voice, and they weren't trying to paint a rosy picture. They also used it as a way for communities to communicate with each other. And so, you know, they'd have one show and somebody would say, well, this is what's going on in my barrio, these are the problems that I see, and that would be transmitted to everybody else as a resource to understand common struggle and understand potential common strategy and common alliances. So it isn't just about sort of having the freedom, but also using it strategically in community organizing, which affected me the most, which I thought that was really powerful.
Okay, Suzuko, I have some more questions for you, but first we'll take this little break, and I want to thank Abby for being here, because I know you need to get going, Abby. So any last words you want to say concerning your experiences over there before you go?
I would kind of just like to echo what Dan was saying about the fact that the revolution in Venezuela is something that has been happening for a long time, and it comes out of these community organizations, like the neighborhood councils, the radio stations. And regardless of what people think about the Chavez government, I have to respect the fact that he's letting these organizations have their voice. So I think that's something that gets overlooked a lot on the left as well as on the right here.
Oh, one last thing. Since you are a young person, and that's what it's all about, is the youth coming in with new ideas and stuff. And what was that? Did you have a sense to have solidarity with other young people?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the most beautiful experiences of the whole trip was standing around one night at the plaza in the neighborhood we were at and watching one of the young men from our delegation stand around in a circle and freestyle with all these boys from the neighborhood. And they were all talking about, like, you know, like my community, the revolution, blah, blah, blah. It was very different from, you know, what I hear boys talking about, say, in the U.S. for the most part, when they're standing around rapping. And then there was, like, you know, watching another person from our delegation doing capoeira with these kids. And
wow, compañera.
Sí.
Uh-huh. And me and Shizuko were out there dancing with all the little girls, and it was really cool.
Okay, thanks, Abby. And once again, I'm excited by this, although I didn't get to go. Okay, so let's take this little break, and we'll be right back.
Bye. Community College would like to invite you to the 16th Annual African Film Festival honoring Black History Month at PCC's Cascade Campus. This year's festival will feature 28 political, historical, and socially charged films as seen through the eyes of Africans. The films will cover a wide range of themes and topics, from the African legacy in Mexico, women's ongoing struggle for equality and independence, to love across class lines and preservation of African cultural and artistic heritage. This cable co-sponsored festival will be free of charge and will cover a five-week period from February 3rd through March 4th. For more information, go to www.africanfilmfestival.org or call 503-244-6111, extension 3630.
Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 16th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from February 3rd through March 4th. This year's festival highlights include films from Angola opening and closing the festival, and an examination of the African legacy in Mexico through screening, symposium, and community conversation. Additionally, there will be a spotlight on AIDS in Africa, Women Filmmakers Week, and appearances by some of the directors at the film festival. For more information, visit AfricanFilmFestival.org or call 503-244-6111, extension 3630.
Jump if you get belly to put on. Drink if you get belly to take on. Enjoy yourself as you think you sabi. Enjoy yourself as you think you sabi.
Del Festival de Películas Africanas que cada año realiza el PCC. Este festival es en honor del mes de la historia africana y del mes de la historia de la mujer en Estados Unidos. El director mexicano Rafael Rebollar Corona intercambiará opiniones sobre su trilogía fílmica el 9 de febrero a las 7:30 de la noche en el Salón 104 del edificio Moniarty Arts and Humanities. Se realizará en el Cascade Campus localizado en el 705 Norte Killingsworth Street. No te olvides que el festival comienza el viernes 3 de febrero y termina el sábado 4 de marzo. Para información acerca de estos lugares, puedes llamar al 503-244-6111, extensión 3630. Nuestra estación KBOO es una de las patrocinadoras.
A ti cantando, yo te seguiré amando porque estás dentro de mí.
And I'm very excited about the African Film Festival over at Portland Community College Cascade Campus. It starts today, actually tonight, and there's a party, a gala, that's going to be starting off this incredible film festival. It's one of the biggest film festivals on the West Coast, and people from all over the Northwest are coming to this, actually. And there's a part of it, as is the promos were saying, that there's going to be a film showing of the legacy of the African in Mexico, which has been a taboo subject. And that's, I won't get into that, I guess, for right now, but there will be, the film director is coming for that, and there's going to be a community discussion with answers and questions, and so you might want to be part of that discussion on the influence of the African in Mexico. But in the meantime, I want to get back to the people who just got back from Caracas, and I have with me Dan, and you are
Shizuka.
Yeah, and I want to get more of a sense of what, when you was down there, I know it was really wonderful, it was a good energy, but beyond that, I'm sort of looking for some concrete information or experiences that you can actually use and bring back to the community here. It's great. I mean, it's wonderful energy. I'm sure it was. But do you see what I'm trying to say? I mean,
the World Social Forum is a little bit different than just being in the Vente Tres. There we had a direct exchange, where I did a mural. Santana had come here and did a mural, and he invited me to come up and exchange an art exchange. So in a concrete way, we did a mural exchange. So it's a cultural exchange and something that could be developed into something that maybe we can go to the city council and start talking about a sister city program and ways in which people can communicate back and forth. But at the social forum, one of the things that people were talking about most was, how do you disseminate this information? How do we get people around the world to understand what's going on here and around the world? Because we just had a new president in Chile. There seems in Bolivia. There's something happening all over in Latin America, which is rejecting the neoliberal austerity programs of the IMF and the capitalist system. That's very, very, very important to see. It's also, as we witness what happened to that country over the years of various presidents who took on those austerity measures and began to shift the wealth to the rich in that country, we can see the very same thing happening right here in the United States under Bush. And I think that's very significant. And if people would see what happened down there, they'd be scared to death about what's happening right here in Portland, in our public school systems, as people continue to work towards privatization and turn away from the public good. That's something that's very important.
Chizuko, I guess, what I'm trying to say, when you went down there and you're back here now, how are you using that experience now as being part of PCASC? What paradigms do you have now? What tools do you have now to deal with what we have with our issues here in this community?
Wow, that's a big question.
It is a big question, right? Because so, in my experience, so often people go to conferences and they feel good, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's great. But the most important thing is, what do you come back with, and what tools do you have to deal with our issues here?
I know exactly what I'm going to say, and that's this. I I witnessed people for whom the word revolution meant life or death, patria o muerte. Mm-hmm. And that, and I don't want to trivialize what happens here in the United States, but there were situations where you could see that the level of seriousness and responsibility was anything beyond that I've ever experienced before in my life. People's responsibility to their community, people's responsibility to their families, people's responsibility to the revolution. And for me personally, what I've taken back is an understanding of how in Latin America, in the barrio where we stayed, with a collective, in the collective where we stayed, that revolution has a meaning, and I understand that meaning now, and I understand the seriousness of that. Because sometimes we can walk around here in the United States with our Che shirt on, with our Cuba hat on,
exactly.
and we don't understand, like, that we can see them and use them as images and as ideas, but for some people it's a matter of life or death, and it's a matter of a better future or nothing. And people are fighting and giving their lives. And I'm, you know, this sort of rhetoric also has been used, you know, in a way that has not been serious. But I mean, I feel now for myself that I understand that now, because we heard testimonials of, you know, people who sacrificed their lives for their communities and how that affected everybody in the community we were staying in. So I just, for me, it's that seriousness and just being able to witness, like, the...
Yeah, that's what I wanted to make really clear is that what is happening, like, for example, what's happening with the Zapatista movement, which has impact throughout the world now, that right. Their paradigm of how they change their community, mm-hmm. the grassroots up. And then what's happening in Caracas, for example, what's happening in with the Brazilian landless movement.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess what I'm trying to get at is what's the change that's happening down there is actually a part of their lives. We're not talking rhetoric. You're not using revolution as some sort of, you know, liberal,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, they're actually,
it.
Yeah, they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they've been doing it for a long time. And I guess what I'm saying that here in the United States with change movements here, my experience is that we tend to get a little bit arrogant, you know, in terms of, wow, we've started the revolution here.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And you go down to and the people in the Zapatista movement, I say, no, we've been doing it a long time before you Americans.
I think
you trying to get at?
I think one thing, too, that's amazing is just... being really awed, inspired, and very humbled by the tactics of some of these movements. They're brilliant.
It's great.
Absolutely brilliant. And they're brilliant because they matter. And they're brilliant because they come from the grassroots. Like you mentioned, La Otra Campaña. That I think is just, I mean, is an amazing idea and an amazing strategy. And just when you think about it, when you read about it, for me, the information I've learned about it makes me really, really reassess sort of like the imposition of solutions.
Yes.
That I think that I tend to do, you know, and maybe other people tend to do upon a situation, and sort of taking that step back and saying the answer, the solution to the problem must come from the people that are affected most by the problem itself. And so I think that's another thing too, that I that how I was affected, that, you know, I take my lead now from, and I mean I did before, but now ever more so, I take my lead from the people that that are on the ground, right?
Suzuko, you are an organizer and you've been doing it a while, and you are a veteran organizer here now, and so I know you've taken some hard knocks and you've had to go through some reality checks as an organizer. Coming back from Caracas, though, And now you being here, and you mentioned tactics. Let's talk a little bit about that. What tactics are we talking about, and what tactics do you think we here in the United States as organizers and change makers can we make use of?
I remember one conversation that I was having, sort of translating between a member of the delegation who didn't under... who is a very basic Spanish, and then I'm a member of the La Piedrita Collective. And after the discussion, the PCAS delegate said to me, it's so strange, you know, in the United States, we would never, never think of going and talking to our neighbor and bringing them a pie as a revolutionary act.
That's great.
never think of it that way. And he said, everything I'm learning here has taught me that the revolution starts from our own individual actions, and even more so he was realizing sort of the repression of community that I don't know how it has come to be in the United States, but I definitely feel it too, and how that is affecting the possibility for social change because we're not talking to one another. So I would say tactic wise, number one is we shouldn't fear our friends, and yet sometimes we do fear our friends and neighbors. And so I think tactically, we, from an individual level, we just need to be open to each other, and both on an individual level as well as an organizing level. And for part of PCASC's work is to build relationships between all different types of organizations. We, for example, had a march on December 10th. Which was International Human Rights Day, and we also wanted, before the WTO meeting, Sixth Ministerial in Hong Kong. So we used that as an opportunity to help bring together a coalition of labor, environmental, and et cetera, international solidarity groups, and use that as an opportunity. That's PCASC's role, I think, in this community as well, is to bring understanding and network opportunities between different types of organizations working on different issues that ultimately, I believe, have the same goal in mind.
Dan, you were about to say something?
Well, I think you were talking about the people in Latin America have been doing this for a long time. I think there are people all over the world that have been doing this for a long time. There is always an opportunity and a window for that to happen, to open up. One of the things that they talked about was the suppression of information through the media, which we can see very clearly here. And you were talking about what are some of the concrete things that can be done. Well, some of those are being done. Indie media, the Internet, and they were talking about at the World Social Forum of Telesur, people coming together, putting up their own satellites, and maybe using Caracas oil wealth in which we can launch our own satellites and to create free media to people all over the world so that they have a voice and they can see what's going on in the world. I think that another thing that was very important was the indigenous movements. This is not people that are unfamiliar with Marxism. They knew Marxism. They had told us that from Bolivia, there was a woman who spoke at this World Social Forum who said that, we rejected the left because we didn't see anything happening. But we also, they rejected us. There is a theory in Marxism that, the revolution was going to come out of the proletariat, or the working class. But in fact, it something began to happen between both of them. Both issues failed. And they admitted their failures, and they came together and said that we had to work together, and they re-examined. They're talking about a new kind of socialism. They're developing it as they go. So people had a hard time trying to explain what exactly it was, but it was a social movement. And that if you look at the constitution of Venezuela, it looks like a labor contract. It is an amazing document that we should look at.
Regarding that, I heard that in the streets of Caracas, people get handed copies of the Constitution.
Oh, yes.
Right?
So yes, that's true.
Can you talk to me what that means? I mean, it's not just handing people a
People, you know, amazingly, what they're doing is handing it out to people everywhere, but it's so that people understand what their rights are within their own neighborhoods. You have to remember beforehand, a lot of people were illiterate, and within the last 4 or 5 years, people become 70%, something like that, are literate now. And this has given people an opportunity to learn and read and know their own individual rights.
Interesting. So does that mean, like, here in the United States, people, it would benefit people if they knew about their own constitution?
I think so. I think that, but there was a man talking about Michael Leibowitz, who was on a panel at the World Social Forum, and he said, you know, this is a beautiful constitution, but there have been many beautiful constitutions. And what he meant was is that it's beautiful as long as it's applied. And what we see in Caracas is that it's being applied.
Suzuko, get your thoughts on this.
I was reading the Constitution on the plane ride home. I was hoping to just sort of have some space to, like, to sort of, just relax. And so I started reading it, and I was struck, and, you know, I haven't read the whole thing. It's kind of long, but in the first articles, it was just amazing. It talked about communal rights and communal responsibilities, and as one of the primary bases of the Constitution that was written by the people is the idea that we owe it to ourselves to care about, we owe it to ourselves to care about each other. And that's a right, and that's a responsibility. And so, for me, I don't want to speak about the Constitution because I haven't read the whole thing, but that impressed me the most, just to see those words right there and to know that people are reading that and that is informing their values.
I think at this point, I should say, this is KBOO, Portland, Oregon, and I'm Eduardo de Angelis Thierry. And this is Buscando America, and I'm here with Dan Shea and Shizuko Hashimoto, and we are talking about the change that's taking place in Caracas, but actually it's taking place throughout Latin America, and actually it's taking place around the world. And we're also talking about community. We're also talking about community and profound change from the most basic of levels, from our own personal levels, which I think has to happen, to the macro level, to that revolution outside of ourselves. But I think if anything is ever going to change, right, and you help me out, you guys, if you think differently, we're going to have to start, I have to start with myself, you know. Even this radio station, the radio station is a community, right? Revolution can't take place if the radio station itself doesn't act on its own principles,
mm-hmm.
right? So let's go out with some music for right now, and we'll talk a little bit more. I'll do a little more announcement about this wonderful African Film Festival that's going to start today at the Portland Community College, Cascade Campus. And so stay tuned.
Caracol.
Número 16 del Festival de Películas Africanas que cada año realiza el PCC. Este festival es en honor del mes de la historia africana y del mes de la historia de la mujer en Estados Unidos. El director mexicano Rafael Rebollar Corona intercambiará opiniones sobre su trilogía fílmica el 9 de febrero a las 7:30 de la noche en el Salón 104 del edificio Moniarty Arts and Humanities. Se realizará en el Cascade Campus, localizado en el 705 Norte Killingsworth Street. No te olvides que el festival comienza el viernes 3 de febrero y termina el sábado 4 de marzo. Para información acerca de estos lugares, puedes llamar al 503-244-6111, extensión 3630. Nuestra estación KBOO es una de las patrocinadoras.
Essa é a história de uma linda história de amor que me contaram e agora eu vou contar. Do amor do príncipe Shah Jahan pela princesa Nilmahal. Do amor do príncipe Shah Jahan pela princesa Nilmahal. Taj Mahal, Taj Mahal, Taj Mahal, Taj Mahal. Essa é a história de uma linda história de amor que me contaram e agora eu vou contar. Príncipe Shah Jahan pela princesa Nilmahal. Do amor do príncipe Shah Jahan pela princesa Nilmahal. Taj Mahal, o esplendor, a maravilha, construído na Índia em 1040, no ano Hégira, na cidade que tem por nome Agra. Amor, um monumento em homenagem ao amor, um presente do príncipe Shah Jahan para sua preferida e amada princesa Nilmahal. Novamente ele chegou com inspiração, com muito amor, com emoção, com explosão.
And I should also announce that we have a pair of tickets to the concert by Pat Macumba. It's the Brazilian band from San Francisco, and they're coming to town on February 25th at 9 p.m., and they're going to be at the Doug Fir Lounge around the corner from our radio station here at the corner of Burnside and 8th. So we have one pair of tickets to the Pat Macumba. It's a concert, Brazilian band from San Francisco. And so if you out there are listening and you want to go to this, we have one pair of tickets. So you can call us here on air, 503-231-8187. I'll say that again, 503-231-8187 for a free pair of tickets to the Doug Fir Lounge for Pat Macumba, the Brazilian band from San Francisco. So if you want to pick that up, go ahead. Also, if you want to have any questions to our guest today, to who recently returned from Caracas, please go ahead and feel free to ask any questions, okay? So, okay.
Abençoado por Deus e bonito por natureza. Mas que beleza em fevereiro! Em fevereiro, que maravilha, tem carnaval. Eu tenho um carro e uma guitarra cantante. Sou flamengo e minha nega continua deliciante. Some baby, eu sou um menino de mentalidade mediana. Pois é, mas assim mesmo, feliz da vida, contente, eu não devo nada a ninguém. Pois é, pois eu sou feliz, muito feliz, comigo mesmo. tropical, abençoado por Deus e bonito por natureza. Mas que beleza em fevereiro, que maravilha tem carnaval. Eu tenho um carro e uma guitarra cantante, sou flamengo e minha musa continua deliciante. Não ser um bando líder, pois é. Mas assim mesmo lá em casa, todos meus amigos, meus camaradinhas me respeitam, pois é. Essa é a razão da simpatia, do poder, do algo mais, da alegria. Por isso que eu moro, moro num país tropical.
Okay, now, now tell us the story on that and what it means for people.
Okay, so before the referendum to real, in which Chavez had to be reelected, the chant was Chavez no se va, that Chavez doesn't leave, that Chavez doesn't get kicked out as president, and so that's sort of been the, you know, that's the song, the catchy song. There's actually a band that created an entire song, and so it's, you know, you hear it and you hear it sung all over Venezuela. And then I saw on a T-shirt, which is, I thought it was really cute, it said, "Hugo Chavez se quedó." So he was reelected back into the presidency, and he made, and so it's "Hugo Chavez se quedó," "Hugo Chavez stayed." And so it's just a real, it's just more
finality to it.
temporally correct or whatever.
Yeah, I know that there's some profound things happening down there, but that doesn't mean that people also don't have fun, right?
Oh, I bet.
God, all the time.
I think the
and
one thing
that's a revolution
that,
without having fun, right?
The one thing, I as an organizer, I'm a little bit sort of, you know, like tense sometimes. And
why is that?
The one thing that I learned in Venezuela that I also take with me, this other tactic, is that, and I learned in a very powerful way, is that if you don't have fun and if you can't appreciate the moment, you're not living the revolution. And so there were times where we were, you know, 2 hours, 3 hours late. The people we were supposed to be meeting with, we couldn't find them. Nothing was. The bus ride from the airport to Caracas took 5 hours instead of 2 hours, and it should have taken half an hour. It's just, there are all of these things that were put in our way as roadblocks, but people dealt with it so beautifully. And I was myself forced to reevaluate my tension as an organizer and turn it into better energy. And so that's something I learned. And people, at the same time, they're very serious about their revolution. They also realize that it will kill you if you don't have fun because it's just so...
Wasn't it Emma Goldman that said...
If I can't dance...
It's not my revolution.
I won't join your revolution.
That's actually, it's a profound thing.
Yes,
definitely.
And we change makers sometimes forget that. I forget that. And I'm trying to learn. I'm trying to keep her words always in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, there's an important event that's, I guess it's not confirmed yet. Could you tell me about this march that's coming up?
Sure. Maybe first we could have Dan talk about
report back.
Has.
Yeah, we're planning on a report back on February 18th at 7 p.m. at SEIU Hall. It's about 26 and Powell. So we have somewhere around 25 delegates that went, and so it should be very interesting, and everybody has something that they're bringing back.
And then as far as the march you're talking about, in early March, I'm pretty sure the tentative date is March 4th, a large coalition made up of organizations including PCASC, but also CAUSA, Boss Workers' Rights Education Project, and PECUN are organizing a big march to educate and mobilize people around the Sensenbrenner Bill, which will be coming up in front of Senate very soon.
Could you explain that for people who are not up to par on that?
Yes. The Sensenbrenner Bill is something that people should definitely take a look at. It's just a Google click away, and it's basically criminalizes the status of undocumented workers on a federal level. It will make the fact that you don't have papers to work in this country a felony. It affects people on an individual level, but it also affects organizations. For example, I work with Vos Workers' Rights Education Project, and I teach English. I help teach English classes, ESL classes, to day laborers. And if the Sensenbrenner Bill were to pass, my actions of knowingly aiding and abetting undocumented workers, illegal immigrants, entre comillas, in commas, would be an act that would be a felony. So it has implications, for example, for unions. Any union that is found to employ or to have as a member an undocumented worker, they can be fined. Businesses that have hired undocumented workers will be fined. So it criminalizes to a great extent, to the highest extent, the...
Sounds like union busting to me, period.
You mentioned another really important local effort called VOS, and I know some really couple good people that are part of that. Could you talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure. I just sort of am in a capacity as a volunteer teaching English classes, but VOS, Workers' Right... Education Project is an organization that it's been around for a little while, and they use tools of popular education to empower and to educate jornaleros, which are day laborers, and KBU is right next to where we give our classes. Day laborers are currently looking for work around 6th and Burnside, and also right across the overpass of 84. And so we hold our classes there, and VOS works with day laborers who are looking for work on the streets to educate and empower about their rights, and also to give them a space to express themselves, which if you're oppressed is sometimes the most important thing that you need.
People want to know more or get more educated on the jornaleros and other issues, VOS, PCASC, is there a phone number and a website?
For PCASC, our telephone number is 503-236-7916, and you can find us on the web at www.pcasc.net.
You want to say that again?
Sure. www.pcasc.net. And then for VOS, I don't have their number memorized, but their website is portlandvoz.org.
Dan, you had some other information, I think, right?
Well, if you wanted to talk a little bit more about the mural, what...
The mural. Yeah. Let us do that.
Okay.
Give us some background on that again.
Okay. Well, PCAS in last November, they had brought Nelson Santana, who is a muralist, and he's doing these huge murals, 3-4 stories high. He came here to Portland at the request of PCAS and did some solidarity murals here. And I had shown him around and taken him to see some murals by one of my colleagues, Hector Hernandez of Metro Murals, and to see Isaka Shamsuddin's murals around Portland State and other places. And he also happened to see one of my art shows that was just coming down at the Red and Black Cafe, and he saw one of my paintings, and he had made a specific request that I come down and paint that as a mural down there. And so we had to go through a lot just to raise money to do that. So Veterans for Peace, Metro Murals, all of my individual friends over the years contributed and made that a reality. And PCAS also subsidized some of that, which is what solidarity is. And that's bringing people together so that they can share information. So when I went down there, one of the first things we tried to do was get the mural painted on a Monday, the 23rd. But that didn't happen because of schedule conflicts. I was going to speak with Pablo Paredes, a conscientious objector of the Iraq War, who had taken the war on trial. But he was stuck in the airport at the time I had to speak, so I had to give that talk alone. But it went very, very well. And then the rain came, and then it got postponed, and we were worried it wasn't going to happen. But on Saturday, this last Saturday, we finally got out there. The rain let up a little bit, and we went out and started to paint that. And the mural and the images are I would call los tres amigos de fascism, which are Mussolini, Bush, and Hitler. It's my comparison of what I believe is happening to this country. I think that our government has already been overthrown and that we have a fascist government in power. It's a very strong statement, and people may disagree with me, but if you look at history, I think we are living in those tendencies.
I want to go back again to what happened in Caracas, and you're going to more...
Caracas, Venezuela.
Caracas, Venezuela. Socorro, again, let's start with you. Could you tell me some more about what else you did down there? Did you attend any specific lectures, or did you hear any specific music?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh. I actually... I did attend one out of very many, but the forum itself was a little bit disorganized, and so several people just sort of, myself included, sort of gave up after a while, and I realized that my time was better spent with the people in the neighborhood we were staying in than trying to run around to conferences that ultimately ended up not happening. But I did attend one really interesting, exciting workshop that was given by several different people from representing different organizations throughout Latin America talking about biopolitics. And so I was translating for a woman on the delegation this was her primary interest. I'm also interested in it, but I was helping her translate. So I don't know if you want to hear the gory details. I mean, it was really complicated, so maybe we want to keep it more general. But it was amazing.
Okay. Again, the World Social Forum, let's give a brief, tell people what that is and for how long it went and why have it. And is it an annual thing?
So this is the fourth annual World Social Forum. Six annual social forum. And this is actually my first time going to it. But there were a number of, like Shizuko said, that it was very unorganized in a lot of ways. And some people even said maybe even being sabotaged in some sense, that there were bureaucracies that are still within the Caracas government that want to see these things not happen. But out of it, there were some specific forums in which people from all over the world are coming together to talk about how they can change society for the welfare of all human beings. There are people that come directly from political parties. There are people from labor. There are people directly from revolutionary movements from various countries. I see there we had people from Colombia, from Brazil, from Bolivia. We had people from Canada. And some of the things, we had people from the Caribbean, you know, who had came. There was a woman who I had a chance to meet, which the general secretary of the oil field workers trade union, Wendy Joy White, and she was, which country was that?
Trinidad.
That was Trinidad, yeah.
And Tobago.
And what was interesting, she also knew somebody I had brought out here some years back at Portland State, Ralph Gonzalez, who is now the prime minister of St. Vincent's. And she says, oh, yeah, Ralph, he's still fighting the good fight, you know. And the world, there's a sort of community among people who have been fighting for revolution for a long time that is a small crowd of people. And out of 80,000 people, you keep running into people you have met somewhere before or knew of, and they knew of somebody that you had been associated with. So that movement is very small. But it has a large voice, and it has a large outreach. And I think that's what's really important. We also had, I had met with a gentleman on the plane back who was, he was a minister, Reverend Fred Morris, who back in the 1970s had been picked up in Brazil and tortured. And you begin to hear these stories. And I remember in the 1980s, he had, during the Central American conflicts, he had produced a magazine called Mesoamerica. And so you would run into people that, of course, I've been around a lot longer, and you'd run into people who were a part of the revolution for a long time, but the same voices, whether you'd been in it for a long time, were the same voices that were coming out of people that were hearing it for the first time. And I think that was the significant thing. And the new thing was that most of the movement was coming from the indigenous peoples around the world.
Also, just some additional background information about the World Social Forum. Usually it's held on a global level, but this year, I think, and it's also the second time that it's happened, it was a polycentric forum. So
polycentric meaning
there were several. There was one in Pakistan, there's one in Mali, and one in Venezuela. So there were three different social forums going on at the same time to focus on specific issues within those spheres. So this was the Western Hemispheric, the America, Social Forum of the Americas that we had gone to. And it was interesting to see there was nobody was holding back from talking about U.S. imperialism. It just, all of the countries outside of the United States and voices from within the United States talked about similar problems that all countries were facing and had faced in relation to U.S. imperialism. And so sort of the shared struggle was even was strengthened or was better, the understanding of the shared nature of the struggle was, yes, better articulated there.
You mentioned polycentric. It's not such a scary word, I guess. And was there, when you was down in Caracas, was there a sharing of solidarity with the two other social forums, the one in Pakistan and where's the other one at?
In Mali.
Mali. Was there, like, a communication with them at the same time?
There wasn't. It was too disorganized for that kind of communication. And, in fact, it was hard to keep up with what was happening. Like Shizuko said, you go to one forum, there may be no interpreters. For those of us who didn't speak Spanish, that was a very difficult process. But there were... there were some concrete things that came out of, and oftentimes not from the panelists. It was from the people that asked questions. The panelists, if they came from, established forums from their country or parties, oftentimes there was the same old rhetoric. There was there was nothing new that I hadn't heard. But people wanted to know, well, how are we gonna really fight this revolution? And there was a guy from Italy, an Italian man who got up and talked about that he says, you know, if we really want to solve this problem of poverty in the world, we need an international minimum wage. And it struck a chord with a lot of people. How do we do that, though, is something else. And he talked about, let's take this before the UN, and let's talk about how we can develop something that we bring everybody's wage up and instead of bringing people's wages down. So we're not whipsawing people from one country to the other. If people won't be, I mean, why do we have, we're talking about undocumented workers coming to this country. Well, people, as far as I'm concerned, they use the term illegal. Nobody is illegal, but people are looking for work. And work should be a human right wherever you are. And people should not be abused by one government or another. And so there was a lot of talk about how that can be developed. And there should be at, workers, sort of workers' rights for people around the world should exist through the United Nations, through treaties, and other things. And that's the responsibility of labor and workers from around the world to do.
Shizuko, when you was down there, did you have opportunity to have solidarity, not just with young people, but with other women, other young women?
Oh, definitely. I in the community we were staying with, you could see sort of the I felt it so strongly within myself too as a woman organizing in the United States that sometimes the glory goes to the men, but you know that the base is the women. And and it was amazing to witness in that, and also to be able to speak with people about that, and to recognize that regardless of who gets the credit, you know, it's the work that's important. And so I just definitely, as meeting with women, was able to feel solidarity and feel a relationship because of that shared experience.
Well, the reason I'm asking you, because again, I'm really trying to learn from the Zapatista indigenous paradigm of organizing, that is to say, from the grassroots level. And what's new about that effort is that more women are leaders or organizers and are taking the lead on that, which is quite a shift from the change that was taking place during the 60s, you know, where it was, you know, that male
machismo.
Well, I don't know. Machismo is a tricky word.
It is.
Yeah, and it depends how you interpret that. But I won't get into that right now. But you see where I'm going with this, Rizuko? I mean,
what was the name of the movie that we showed before? I think that is something that is available.
Yeah, PCAST has in its library, and it's available for anybody to take out. And I'm sure the people who are able to see the movie, we showed it as a fundraiser before we left. The name of the movie is Hablemos del Poder, Talking of Power. And it just basically was produced by Global Women's Strike in 2005, and it touches on that very theme about the role of women in Venezuela's Bolivarian social revolution, and how the opening that was allowed for the revolutionary process and the values of equality really challenged sexism in Venezuelan society and gave power and voice to women who, I mean, no doubt about it, they were asserting their power and their voices before the revolution. It was just they weren't getting credit for it. So, I mean, I think that's something that we also have to keep in mind too. It's not that women don't do the work. It's just that they don't get credit for it. And I think it's amazing that they do it in spite of that. And I think that as a woman, that's really important for me to sort of reiterate that I don't think throughout the history of the world women haven't been suppressed until this moment where we've been empowered. We've been doing work, you know, whether we get credit for it or not, or whether we're appreciated for it or not.
Yeah, as a man and Latino, I'm trying to reframe my experiences as a male, and it's in terms of change and in terms of women's experiences, you know. And I'm learning.
We all are.
We all are.
And it's hard, but if revolution is going to take place, I better, again, as I'm repeating myself, it's got to start with myself, and I got to really, you know, look at my own.
I have a problem with this stuff, though, just saying it has to start with myself. Oftentimes, the religious community uses that, you know, that we need to, all we need to do is change ourselves and the world will change. I don't believe that. Because one of the real problems is that there's a structural difference out there in which allows people to be themselves. And that through the propaganda of education from kindergarten to college, there's a whole structure that's fighting against you finding yourself. That it takes a community. It takes a group of people working together. That it's not individual, it's collective. And I think we need to start thinking about life as a collective responsibility that allows the autonomy of individuals. But I think you need that to happen almost simultaneously. Mm-hmm. If you do it separately, you may get lost.
Once again, this has been Buscando America. And I'm Eduardo de Landeros Tierra. And we're talking about the change that's taking place throughout Latin America, and also talking about the World Social Forum that took place in Caracas, Venezuela. And I have with me Dan Shea and Shizuko Hashimoto, who were down there. And once again, for people who wanted more information, and more information possibly about the World Social Forum for the next one, if people want to, how do people get hold of the World Social Forum if they want to go to the next one? Is there any information out there?
I would
Google
just it. Google it.
Google it. It's there.
Yeah. With our experiences, it was organized in the most sixth social forum in Caracas, Venezuela. It was organized in the most organic way, which meant that it was very last minute. And so even for ourselves, the schedule of events that were occurring at the social forum were not available online until at all, and were only available when we arrived in Caracas. So I wouldn't expect too much, but don't let that prevent you from doing what you want. Everybody makes their own decisions, and the information is out there. So I don't want this to be a diss of the World Social Forum. It's what you make of it. And some people were able to make a lot of it, and some people couldn't make that much of it. But that shouldn't prevent anybody from trying.
Okay. Now, since we're coming to the end of our program, final words and thoughts and feelings about your experiences in Caracas, and Dan?
Well, God, there's so many things. You know, I think that the experience is one that in which I have to kind of sort of digest all the information that's happening, that happened down there. But like I said before, the country, the landscape, the beach that we went to, all of the wonderful things that we saw, the beauty of the country was made up in the people. And the people were teachers. Everyone we talked to were teachers.
Shizuko.
My last words, if anybody...
Your last words.
My last words for the show is, if anybody was at all interested in what you heard today, I really encourage you to get involved in PCASC. I know a lot of people sort of joined the delegation not knowing what would happen to them, and their lives were changed forever. And I just want to let people know that these opportunities are available through PCASC on a regular basis, and I really hope people... If you are at all touched or inspired or curious about what we've been talking about for the last hour, please get involved at PCAS. Once again, our web address is www.pcasc.net. And I just want to let people know PCAS stands for the Portland Central America Solidarity Committee, and it's also the Cross-Border Labor Organizing Committee Coalition.
Okay. That does it for Buscando America. And... I always learn something when I do this show at all kinds of levels, and I hope it's the same thing with you guys. And I sincerely wish you much poetry, much art, and much love, and much peace, and also much, much merrymaking, right? What's the point of it all if you can't have merrymaking? Ciao, amor, arte, y más poesía. Cuídate.
amo no
Samunu ke bakanange.